Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. This is my weekly show where we have profound conversations, in-depth conversations with practitioners, authors, thought leaders, wise elders, people of wisdom to help us understand and get a much greater perspective on who we are, our bodies, and the world. And as I like to say, getting empowered with truthful information allows us to make really informed decisions. And that's what I really want for everybody, is to make a truly informed decision. And I also want to remind everyone, this is part of my Breast Health Awareness Month series, which I've been doing all month. So take advantage of the fact that I have articles I'm sending out through my website. So if you opt into my list on What Women Must Know, you'll be getting ongoing information. If you go to my Facebook page, I'm posting daily up there with all sorts of great information related to breast health awareness. Take advantage of gaining this knowledge. It truly is our greatest power, not just about helping us to prevent breast cancer or helping us to heal from an episode, but really to support our health, our optimal health and well-being. That's really the goal of what we're doing here. And there's been so many great presenters and so much interest in what I've been doing all month. I just want everyone to know we're going to extend it into November. So next week we have one more presentation addressing a really important piece of this breast health puzzle. So I hope you'll be joining me there as well. Well, I'm really thrilled today to have a very special integrative complementary medical doctor with me. I was fortunate enough to meet her last year when we both were speakers at the Cure to Cancer Conference in San Diego. And she is just such a wealth of knowledge and wisdom and is a creating an amazing center that is integrating many, many modalities. She really is at the forefront of integrative medicine. So it's my pleasure to introduce you today to Dr. Lee Erin Keneally. A little bit about Dr. Keneally. She attended the University of Texas School of Public Health and then attended the University of Health Sciences Chicago Medical School. She completed her postgraduate training at the Harbor UCLA Medical Center in Los Angeles, California. Dr. Keneally soon realized that conventional medicine had very limited returns and did not always improve the health of her patients. Her patients were hungry for alternative approaches for improving their health. This led her to study integrative and complementary therapies, and since then she has revolutionized the landscape of medicine. Dr. Keneally feels that we must treat the patient with the disease and not the disease of the patient. She has discovered that many factors contribute to the disease process. Therefore, many modalities must be used to reverse it. Dr. Keneally began practicing medicine in 1986, and in 1992, she founded the Center for New Medicine in Irvine, California, where she serves as medical director. Her practice is firmly based in the belief that strictly treating the health problems with medications does not find the root cause of the illness. Dr. Keneally treats the whole person and is open to all potential treatment possibilities. She has over 20 years of experience in finding the root cause of an illness and has taken numerous advanced courses, including homeopathic, nutritional, and lifestyle approaches, while studying disease, chronic disease, and cancer treatments. She has a true passion to change her patients' lives and give them their life back. And isn't that the true purpose of any healer? So, Dr. Keneally, I am so happy you have made time to be with us today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
And it's great to have someone who really has this broad, holistic perspective, which is really so necessary when you're dealing with any kind of illness. We have to address many facets and, as you like to say, find the modalities that treat that person, because no two people are the same. And I know you have a lot of cancer patients in your clinic. And by the way, I mean, your clinic is so amazing. It's huge. How big is it? How many square feet does it?
Yeah, we have a 20,000 square foot facility, and we have it's comprised of a team of physicians, health practitioners, nutritionists, managerial people, herbalists, acupuncturists, energy workers, hyperbaric technicians. So we do a little bit of everything to fix people. And so it's an amazing team of people that are just really passionate about transforming health and how it's delivered.
And that really is the model I hope is expanding it into the world, because we do need a team. It does take a team of all these different modalities and to find the right, you know, the right pieces for each person's puzzle.
Right, exactly. Everybody's a tapestry and unique. And so there's not a one-size-fits-all. Just like if you have depression, there's no one drug that's going to fit everybody.
Right. So let's talk about breast health awareness. So we'll start with breast health, and I know you do treat people who have a diagnosis of breast cancer and other cancers as well. What are some of the things you have found to be important in supporting our health overall, and particularly if there are certain facets that we need to understand that particularly support us in maintaining our breast health?
Well, there's a lot of things. So let's talk about some prevention. I think, first of all, women ask me all the time, okay, should I get a mammogram? What testing should I get? And my big things for 2004 is prevention is priceless. And with cancer, 1 in 2.5 people, and when it comes to breast, there's probably, you know, there's over 200,000 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer, and about maybe a quarter of those, or a little bit less than a quarter, will die of it. And so, and then we can't forget about the men in the world, because there are men diagnosed with breast cancer also.
Right.
So I think the big thing is, first of all, most important thing is what is your emotional quotient, your emotional attitude. And if women, what happens with breast cancer, it's an emotion that's tied to unrest in a woman's nest. So what does that mean? Mm-hmm. Well, usually what it means is that there is something going on with a child or a family member, and it's creating unrest in the woman. Because I tell people stress starts in the head and ends in the body. And so, and there was a very, very famous, or is, he's still alive, famous German oncologist who talked about this and really has proven it. And it's called the biological laws of medicine. And it makes sense that people go through some kind of traumatic event and it manifests itself in an illness. And like today, I had a patient, 48 years old, who came in with her sisters, and she had just been diagnosed just literally 2 weeks ago. And fortunately, she came to see me before surgery or chemo or any recommendations were done. And that's very prudent, because even before surgery, you need to be prepared for surgery, and you need to have your body all ready for any kind of surgery, but especially cancer surgery. And then if you do chemo, it's the same thing. And I tell people, even if you do surgery, chemo, or radiation, that's just the first three things that may or may not be necessary, and that there are, that's just the first three steps of maybe 100 things that you have to do. But going back to, we're talking about emotions, but emotions play a big part. But the doctor that I was talking about is Dr. Hammer, H-A-M-E-R, and he had cancer himself, and he went on a mission to figure out why he had cancer. Well, the interesting thing about him is he had cancer because his son had been tragically killed. So then he started asking all of his patients, and all of his patients could tell him why, pretty much why they had the cancer. So then he started developing a team of people who could process these people's emotions. Anyway, it turned out that he treated over 30,000 patients with a 90-something percent success rate. He's still alive, and now they're teaching his courses on how to emotionally heal people all over the world. So we have to let go of our unresolved emotional conflict, and whatever it is, we've got to find out what it is and then absolutely terminate that emotion and get help in the proper way to change that.
Can I just jump in here? Because actually, my next week, the interview that I have is with a woman who's been trained with Dr. Hummer, and we're going to be talking about this. But the important point that you're making is that there is always an emotional piece when you have a chronic disease process going on, right?
Correct.
You always have to understand. Yeah, and that should be part of a comprehensive integrated treatment addressing the emotional, whatever emotional issue is going on within that person, because there is something, definitely. Right?
Right.
You would say that.
Absolutely.
Say that every person has, is dealing, and it has to be acknowledged. You just can't go in and do these physical treatments not addressing the emotional wounds that are being carried within us.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. So I tell people the emotional solutions and treatment for our patients are just as important as the vitamin C, the diet, the detox, and everything. So it's absolutely essential that we deal with that. Now, the other thing is all of us need to be mindful of the food that we're putting in our mouth. And most people today are not embracing a healthy lifestyle. So that's eating foods that heal and nourish and strengthen our body. And so basically what that is, it's much more vegetables, there's fruits, it's all organic, there's no wheat because the wheat is contaminated with insecticides and pesticides, which are causing a lot of the health problems that we're having today. I tell people it's not that our wheat was so bad, it's that the chemicals they put in the wheat. And that was kind of recently discovered by an MIT professor. So I tell people wheat should be avoided because it affects the thyroid. It affects everything from head to toe also. So wheat just cannot be in our diet anymore. People need to eat good fats, and they need to eat fruits and vegetables, and they need to avoid processed, it should be what my comment is, it's got to be, touched by the sun and untouched by man. And so you need to eat things that are from the earth and a wide variety of them. And then when I have sick people, obviously I do some customized things for that. So then one big thing is, how are people sleeping? You know, most people are watching TV, have the computer, have their phone on, have all kinds of, they're not sleeping well. 50% of the population, probably over 40, isn't sleeping well, and a lot of young people aren't sleeping well. So you're supposed to sleep in a pitch black room without electricity, without electronics, and you may or may not need melatonin, because melatonin is released while we sleep in pitch black. And if you're not sleeping in pitch black, your body cannot make melatonin. And then as we age, our levels of melatonin go down. But it's a very protective agent against breast cancer. And so it's something you can actually check melatonin levels in the body. So it's a good thing to do with patients. Now, exercise. I just tell people, if you just exercised, which gets oxygen into your tissues and it helps the lymphatic circulation, then it's amazing, how exercise can pretty much reduce cancer by 50% if you just consistently do it and breathe. You do vigorous exercise. You can't just do you can't just do mild walking. You need to do walking with a little bit of cardiovascular and not long. It's not that you do it long. You don't have to run a marathon. You don't have to go to a gym, but you must exercise. And with our sedentary lifestyle, you know, sitting is the new smoking. Everybody sits all day long. They don't move their body. And we've got to be ambulating and moving our body. I tell people the most important thing is not your exercise, but your NEA, your non-exercising activity. If you're sitting at a computer all day, you don't have any non-exercising activity. So use the opportunity to wash clothes, wash dishes, walk, park further for getting gas or getting groceries or getting anything. Try to incorporate as much activity and don't be lazy and avoid activity.
Do you have a favorite form? Do you like interval training where you just
right.
do short bursts?
It's interval training. I call it pulsed training. So if you're on a treadmill, and let's just say you're on a treadmill, or maybe you're walking and you're walking 4 miles an hour, every 2 minutes you go up 30 seconds as fast as you can.
Right.
So you can do that on a treadmill or a bike, and you can do it also if you're outside. If you're just outside, you can do that also. And so, so it's a very, very wonderful, good thing to do. And also, not to mention, it detoxifies you. Plus, it creates more endorphins. And it helps your circulation. So exercise is like a wonderful, magical drug. What women have to watch what they drink. They should avoid excess alcohol use. You should probably no more than 4 servings of alcohol per week. And the risk is increased with several drinks a day. So, and then if you do drink alcohol, you should be taking a B complex that's high in folic acid, and that will help you. Also, like people, one important thing I tell people as a prevention thing is that eating broccoli, because broccoli contains indole-3 carbinol, which helps promote healthy estrogen balance in the body, and it protects the breast cells. Now, one big area of concern is breast implants, and breast implants may increase your risk of breast cancer, and so I know people do it, and some people, it's just a personal thing, but they are a foreign, anytime you have a foreign object in your body, it creates a response. And so people who do have breast implants need to take very extra precautions to monitor themselves, because that's, again, when typical mammography doesn't work, or even thermography may not be a good, maybe not be a good detective for cancer.
Well, can I just ask you one quick question?
Sure.
About that? So there's two kinds of implants. There's silicone-based, and then there's saltwater saline. Obviously, there's the casing around the saline. And do you see this with both forms of implants, their risk, increased risk?
I don't know if anyone's done a study comparing saline implants and the silicone, so I don't know. Probably more because the saline ones are made out of, they have silicone on the outside.
Yes.
So the only difference is that there's saline water that fills up the silicone ones. And so I don't know, but again, it's all about the foreign object. It's all about the circulation.
Right.
And if
women have it, what should they do? Is there any precaution they should be doing in addition to all the things you're recommending?
Yeah, well, they just need to partner up with a good doctor to get the proper screening.
Okay.
So, and we'll talk about that in a second,
okay.
About screening.
Okay.
I have all of my patients cleanse their liver. I prefer patients to do a liver gallbladder flush because that's where all your hormones are metabolized.
Mm-hmm.
So the liver must break down the estrogen and process it. And so all of our livers are being compromised and challenged because of the enormous amount of chemicals that we're all being exposed to each and every single day. So cleansing your liver is a wonderful thing. We recommend two different ways. One is coffee enemas. The other is a liver flush. And you will feel great after both of them, so you can't go wrong. I tell patients they may need iodine. A lot of people are deficient in iodine. You can actually check blood levels of iodine. And so I recommend that patients need, because this causes what they call apoptosis, which is our natural mechanism of killing cancer in our body. And so, and it even can kill some early cancer cells. So it's a very, very beneficial way of just one more thing that we can change the physiology of our body. Now, all of us are, especially women, are cleaning every single day, and we need to be careful with the cleaning products. And you, like, I don't have any cleaning products in my house. Don't need to use clean. I have other things that just that clean without utilizing cleaning. And I'm not talking about just soap that you wash your dishes with. I'm talking about all the other things. But all of those cleaning products contain lots of chemicals. So try to use cleaning products that have non-toxic residues and are not what we call endocrine disrupting chemicals. Because those are some of the big, big things that are creating more breast cancer because of the disruption in the hormones. And that's one other area is, like, get your hormones checked. Check your hormones. Now, what hormones do women have? They have their thyroid hormone. They have their pancreas, which controls their blood sugar. We have the adrenal glands, which are little glands that sit on top of your kidneys, and they make over 100 hormones. And then you have the ovaries, which make estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. So they don't work alone. They work in an orchestra, and they all communicate and talk to each other. And so you need to have all your hormones balanced. And even I have 20-year-olds, 25-year-olds who theoretically shouldn't have hormonal imbalances, and they do. And then if you're 40-plus, you pretty much are going to have some kind of hormonal imbalance. One, because of aging, but two, because of the environment that we're living in today. Everyone needs to get their vitamin D level checked. I would say that 99% of people that walk in here have low vitamin D. And so vitamin D is absolutely critical to get. You need to properly get the proper amount of vitamin D. And stay on it and get your levels checked once or twice a year.
And what number do you like to see vitamin D at?
That's a good question. I usually try to achieve about somewhere between 50 and 60. And most people come in, I would say almost every single person comes in on a very low level. I rarely see. The only people that come in normal is because they're already taking it. One big thing that all of us need to change is eliminate all the plastic in our life, and that's plastic water bottles and then all the plastic we use. And that would save the environment and save ourselves. But the number one pollutant in man is plastic. So we need to really eliminate plastic out of our life and not use water bottles, because it's going to help you and help the environment. Because there was a great show National Geographic did, CNN did, on the plastic ocean about all the phthalates that are in the ocean, and they're disrupting all living creatures, not just humans, but all living creatures. And so you think that the polar bears don't have any chemicals in them. Well, they do. They have lots of mercury and phthalates and all kinds of chemicals. So it's a very, very serious thing, and people don't realize, and no doctor tells our patients, you've got to clean up your body. We got to detox. And so, but people, I've been saying the plastic water bottles for at least 15 years, and now, of course, now it's very popular, but I've been saying it for 15 years. And maybe not last but not least, is probably meditate. all of us need to meditate means to establish order, and it decreases the stress hormone cortisol, and it increases the production of serotonin, our feel-good hormone, and it improves our immunity. So all of us can take 1 minute, 5 minutes to meditate, and when I say meditate, just get a meditation app. Don't, you know, you're not going to learn how to be a Zen monk in a day or two or three or a week or a month. It takes a long time for them. There are great meditation programs for people to do, and they can just they listen to an auditory program. And like I said, even a minute, just deep breathing is a meditation process. And so I don't think it's that difficult to incorporate these wonderful positive functions that we could do every day. I mean, and not do the things that really don't matter. We consume our day with a lot of things that don't matter. We all need to be mindful and conscious of the things that we are doing every single day, and do things that are only going to enhance and add positive value to our life. Yes, we're going to have stress. Yes, we're going to have tragedy. Yes, we're going to have things. But life is all how you respond to it. And you, if you have wonderful friends and wonderful support team, then you'll get through things. And it's just part of life. And so it's critical that we all each take care of ourselves, because we all affect each other, and it affects our planet as a whole.
And I couldn't agree more, especially the role of meditation. It just really needs to be a foundation of how we choose to start each day. It makes a huge difference.
Right. It does. That's not difficult.
So can we have your thoughts on screening, breast screening?
Yes. So in this day and time, most patients want to know if they have cancer, okay? And we have, in the conventional medical realm, we have many ways of deciphering that. And one of them is the mammogram. And then years ago, thermography used to be part of a screening tool. And then we have colonoscopies, we have endoscopies, we have CT scans, we have PET scans. We have all these different modalities, but they only determine things when they're of any size. So if you're on a CT scan or an MRI, then it only detects, you know, when something is of sizable, like maybe 5 millimeters, 3 to 5 millimeters. Well, from one cancer cell to a tumor is 10 years. And so we don't want to wait to the 10-year mark, because then it's a lot of work to unravel 10 years. So for my whole big thing for 2014 is that prevention is priceless. So all of us need to practice preventive, proactive, personalized medicine, whether it's themselves or with their doctor or with their health practitioner. And we have all these tools available today. So if I had a patient who wanted to do screening for cancer, then I would have them do something called the cancer profile. Now, the cancer profile is a blood test that's actually been around a long time, and it tells, it determines three different values of HCG, and HCG is the hormone of pregnancy, and it's the hormone of malignancy. And so we can decipher very quickly if through that test that takes about 10 days to get back, and it not only checks the level of HCG, but it also will determine the levels of your oxygen. So it will determine an enzyme that will determine if your body's functioning at anaerobic metabolism. Anaerobic means no oxygen. And cancer thrives in a high sugar, acidic, and low oxygen environment. And so if we want our body to have the correct environment, that enzyme needs to be normal. So it's a great tool to detect early on. Now, there is another blood test on the market that I find, since it's been out and what I've utilized, it's about, I would say, of a 10-year cascade on cancer, it's about year five, six, or seven, something like that. And it's called the OncoBlood.
Mm-hmm.
And the OncoBlood is a test that determines the ENOX2 protein. The ENOX2 protein is what cancer cells make. And right now, I'm not sure. I think they can determine at least 32 cancers now. So they can detect if you have the ENOX2 protein and where it is. So that's very effective because you can start doing all the things to change, and you can also check with the blood and on both of those tests if they are normal and changing.
Right,
so
you know,
it's a beautiful tool.
Especially if it can pinpoint the specific part of the body that is involved. Because some of these tests will just tell you generally there's something brewing, but not let you hone in on where the problem may be.
Right, whereas the OncoBlood determines exactly if you're making the proteins and then what organ it's identified with. So it's interesting. I had a lady who has breast cancer, and her husband wanted to come in and with her to talk to her about what we were going to do. And then he says, we can do the OncoBlood test, and we can do these other tests. And then he says, well, I think I'm going to do these too. And so he did them, and we found not only one cancer, but two cancers in him.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a beautiful tool. So it avoids all of the disastrous, horrific experiences that patients have when they come in and they're very, very in stage 4 cancer and they're not doing well and they're very, you know, suffering. When we can teach our patients how to heal themselves by themselves. And be monitored properly without fear and trepidation and absolute suffering and loss of life. And so because so many people do not, when they have to go through surgery, chemo, and radiation, they've lost all their productivity. Right. And like today, I had a patient, she was 82 today, and she has colorectal cancer, and she's had it for a couple of years. But she's not a surgical candidate. She's not a chemo candidate because she's 82. And she's been able this entire time since she's been diagnosed to live life to the fullest. She's vacationing in Del Mar. She's vacationing in, Nantucket, on the East Coast. I mean, she goes there all the time. She's traveling. In fact, I told her, I said, gosh, where have you been? You miss your appointments. She goes, oh, well, we're on vacation here and we're here. And I'm like, oh my goodness, you know? And she's 82 years old. So she's
working with you in addressing all these factors from a more integrative approach and is managing. She's doing well.
Exactly.
Now, can I just ask you, that gentleman that came with his wife and had the test done, so as a result of getting that information, then he was able to get into action and address whatever facets that needed to be attended to optimize his health so he wouldn't have to go down that path?
Oh, yeah, we're finding out. I do something called the bioimmune survey. You have acupuncture points on your fingers and toes that correspond to every organ in your body. And there was a very famous doctor by the name of Reinhold Voll, V-O-L-L. And he was a medical doctor and physicist who in the 1960s taught doctors how to determine what was wrong with someone by looking at the acupuncture meridians. So this particular methodology was computerized into a machine called the BioMeridian. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Cheryl.
Sure.
And so the BioMeridian. So now I can determine from something what I call the cancer cascade where it is, where the cancer is. Does it have a blood supply? Does it have lymph? Is it trying to form a tumor? Is it trying to all these other things? And so I can do that. So no scan tells me that. Scans only tell me things when they're big. I have a lot of patients who have beautiful PET scans and they have cancer. And how I determine that is I check for a blood test called, I can do it with a cancer profile, I can do it through OncoBLET, and I can also do it through a test called the circulating tumor cells and circulating stem cells. The circulating tumor cells are the cells from the cancer themselves, and the circulating stem cells are the cancer wannabes. And so we can determine that with a blood test. And so, like, let's just take hypothetically, for example, a lady comes in. She was diagnosed 3 months ago with right-sided breast cancer. She has a 1 centimeter tumor. The surgeon says, okay, we are going to do a lumpectomy. She has a lumpectomy. They look to see if it's in the lymph node, so they do a lymph node biopsy to see, and let's say they don't find anything. If they don't find anything, they may or may not recommend some chemo or radiation or some combination, or they may not recommend any chemo or radiation. So then they come to see me. And they go, okay, Dr. Kennedy, I want to make sure I don't have cancer. So then that's when I will do the circulating tumor cells. I will do a thermography. So let's talk about screening and imaging.
Let's do that when we get back.
We
need to take a quick break, and then we'll continue this really profound and in-depth conversation of all the things you really need to know to protect yourself, optimize your health, and know where to go if you are dealing with breast cancer. So hang in there. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You are listening to What Women Must Know, and I will be right back. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You are listening to What Women Must Know, and we are having the most fascinating and important conversation today with Dr. Keneally, who is the founder of the Center for New Medicine in Irvine, California, very comprehensive integrative and complementary medicine center. So, Dr. Keneally, we were about to be talking about screening with thermography, mammography. We're going to talk about the difference and what you recommend and have found to be effective.
Right. So what I do in my office, I do sometimes recommend mammography. It is just for women out there listening. Mammography is the standard of care. Now, there are multiple opinions on how often you should have it done, and, you know, there's the ACOG group, and then there's all these different groups who have all of these different guidelines. But the typical guideline is you start getting mammography screening at age 40, and then depending on what your history is, you would do it approximately every 2 years from 40 to 50, and then after 50 years of age, you would get it annually. So, but if you look at mammography and what it is, mammography is radiation, and so it's cumulative. So I think that we have to look at. There's such an increased risk of cancer when you get the routine mammography screening, as I discussed. So I think now they're saying, and then with all that screening, they said, you know, you basically can, you'll save maybe one life, maybe. So we're probably spending a lot of time and energy on screening and putting people at risk and not really getting the answers we need to get. And that's what I think, you know, is the issue. So thermography, though, is a thermal image of your breast. And it tells, so cancer is a very active process. And on a thermography, which does not touch you, it's just a pure picture with a thermographic camera, And so it doesn't touch the patient. It doesn't compress. You don't. There is absolutely no radiation. There is no invasion to the patient whatsoever. So I have to say, through the many, many, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of mammographies that we have done in our clinic, that we thermography, we have found that we find the cancer very early on thermography as opposed to mammography. Now, if you read a mammogram description and report of a patient, they will usually say that 15 to 20% of cancers are missed on routine mammography. So there's about a 20% chance they're going to miss something that could be there. So mammography.
And what percentage of the time do they think something is there and there isn't?
Right, exactly. A high percent, very high percent. And so people are getting, they're getting procedures done that don't need to be done. Because you want to avoid invasion in your body, surgery. You want to avoid those kinds of things. So the thing to do would be to really use different kind of testing. So I tell people it would be well worth it for you to do thermography and, like I said, some of these other screening tools such as the cancer profile or the OncoBlood. Yes, they cost money, but I tell people you're going to save money now. Because even when you have to pay your copay for surgeries or chemo or radiation, radiological procedures in hospital stays, you know, you're going to be paying a lot more then than you are if you just practice preventive medicine.
Exactly. And not only paying physically, but also
physically,
emotionally
mentally, and psychologically,
yeah.
Correct. So you'd be better off if you just did a really good screening tool, and it's really not that much money, but it's worth it. And today, now, we have it very well organized in how we can do it now. So
How much is it? How much is that cancer profile or the
Well, the cancer profile is about $350, I think.
Okay.
The OncoBlood is about probably, I'm thinking it's about, I think, twice as much.
Okay. But the
for the money, though, Cheryl, I probably do the cancer profile. I'll tell you why. Because what I found in my experience, and I'm probably the only one in the United States who has my experience because I was the first person to do OncoBlood.
Right.
So, and it just happened that they found me because they knew I was very, very open to doing new things. And I'm always skeptical. I spent a lot of time doing due diligence and a lot of things. So I went, I don't know about this. So anyway, to make a long story short, now that I've done many of them, I'm like, okay, OncoBlood's great and wonderful because it identifies the organ, but the cancer profile tells me early on, plus it tells me if you're low oxygen. So if you're low oxygen, you got to be much more aggressive with getting oxygen into your body than someone who has an ideal oxygen and oxygenated environment. And then there's ultrasound. An ultrasound will tell you lumps and bumps. But again, it has to be big enough, Cheryl. So we don't want to wait until there's something big enough to start, taking care of in the body. You know, we want to be proactive. And then if you were going to do the circulating tumor cells, that's about $500 to $600. If that's a blood test that checks for any kind of cancer, circulating tumor cells and stem cells. So there's, a lot of screening methods you could do, and it's not the kind of thing you're going to repeat these all the time. You know, it's not the kind of thing you have to do, over and over every month. You got to spend $300. No, because once you do it, you can, sometimes I may wait a year before I do another one. So we just have beautiful testing that we can do that's very simple, easy, fast, and we get the results really fast, and then the patient can be at peace. So
I'll tell you. Early warning system that you have in place.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because the earlier we find out what's going on, the more we can make those corrections.
Right.
And we can use
exactly.
all the modalities that you've researched without having to be more aggressive in
right,
the
because
treatment.
A lot of people will tell me, you know, Dr. Kinley, I've always eaten right, I've always exercised, I've always this, and I always that. And I say that, well, the last time I looked, you don't live in a bubble. And so I tell people, it's not only what you are doing, it's what is around you. And look at the world today compared to 50 years ago. 50 years ago, I always tell people, we have to look at our children today. How are our children today? Are they healthy or unhealthy? Then you know how prevalent disease is going to be. And our children are extremely unhealthy today.
Right.
And we have autism, we have ADD, we have diabetes, we have cancer, we have, I mean, all of these illnesses that are taking place, and they haven't even, excuse me, they haven't even lived life long enough. And so the children are the canaries in the mine, and they are predicting what's going on with the world today. And so there's a lot of people who really do live very healthy lifestyles, but they can get cancer because the world around us, there's electromagnetic fields, there's chemicals in all the air, water, and food that we eat and breathe and drink.
You know,
so,
I just want to say, you know, I've been doing this nutrigenomic testing, and one of the things that I see consistently, Dr. Keneally,
mm-hmm.
is that people have, and I would say about more than 90% of the people I've tested have a gene, this cytochrome P1B1 gene, that impairs the proper metabolism of estrogen in the liver, turning it into a form that can damage DNA. So even though you're eating really healthily, I mean, we're making estrogens every month, we're exposed to estrogen chemicals, some of us are taking hormones with estrogen, pill, identical hormones, it comes in from a variety of ways. But that is a genomic tendency that you can't properly metabolize estrogen into the weaker
right.
form. It goes the other direction. So we would never know that ordinarily, and that's where you know, the broccoli, eating the cruciferous vegetables, doing the coffee enemas, all those things I'm sure are being proactive in supporting people to detoxify through the liver.
Right. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely correct.
So I have a question I wanted to ask you. For those women who have had diagnosis and have gone through more conventional treatments, cancer, radiation, which are generally the ones that are the conventional treatments. What is your advice to those women after they've gone through those treatments? What do they need to know to prevent any recurrence in the future?
Well, that's a great question because I see a lot of those patients now. Is if you've had surgery or chemo or radiation for breast cancer or any kind of cancer, you need to partner up with the doctor to make sure your cancer is gone. And the way we have a cure is that our circulating tumor cells and our circulating stem cells are zero. So any doctor practicing today should be checking to make sure that their patient's circulating tumor cells and stem cells are zero. And so don't just because you have a normal PET scan, normal mammography, normal whatever testing the doctor is using to determine whether you have it or not, you need to make sure that that is the case. So with that said, and if they don't want to do circulating tumor cells, we would do a cancer profile because the surgery, chemo, radiation doesn't change the environment of the cancer.
Right.
It only makes the environment of the cancer worse.
Right. And that's such an important point. You know, those root cause issues are generally still in place unless people have made some radical changes.
Right, exactly. And that brings up one very, very important aspect about the mouth. So not only we go over how people sleep and what they eat and what they drink and how do they live their life, but what is going on in their mouth. And so there have been study after study showing that if you've had a root canal, which basically is a infection, and it's impossible to remove all the bacteria and completely fill the canal. So So most of the time, I would say all the times, you've got to have the tooth pulled, unfortunately. And a lot of the times you have to have ozone. But what they say is if you do testing, you will see that there is a direct correlation between a root canal and breast cancer. Now, some people, I've read several different clinics studies, and they found that there's probably close to a 97-98% correlation. One study went and said that it was 100%. But it's high. Whatever it is, it's high,
wow.
And I've read it
yes.
in multiple places.
Right.
So we do teeth mapping in our clinic to see exactly what the problem is and what tooth. And so each one of our tooth is located on an acupuncture meridian. And so then we determine, and then we work with biological dentists who know and understand this concept of looking at the teeth and infection, and so that they can properly address it.
So
but root
it?
Canals are basically basically a cave for bacteria. And then when you fill the canal, it eliminates the blood flow to the tooth, and preventing your immune system from killing off the microbes and the bacteria that remain in the tooth canal.
That's what I was going to ask you. So the mechanism of action there is when you have an infection from this dead tooth that's in your mouth, it's compromising your immune system.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. And it's a day, it's a 24/7 day thing. So.
Right. Yes. So constantly. So.
And then these can leak from all over in your body, right? Because that's why there's books written on how the mouth is the gateway to disease. Just like look at the people who have heart disease, and they go and get their teeth cleaned, or they go and have dental work, and then some of those bacteria have basically escaped out into the bloodstream and damaged the valves. It's the same concept.
Right.
And then they end up with a mitral valve replacement or sometimes a heart transplant. I worked with Denton Cooley, I think this was 30-plus years ago, and I was involved in the first heart transplant that Denton Cooley did at Texas Heart Institute, and that's exactly what happened. The person was only like 30 years old, and they had he had dental work, and then it went and ate at his heart, and he had to go and have a heart transplant. So,
I think I mentioned this to you a little bit before the show, but I attended the American Academy of Oral Systemic Health, which is a really interesting organization that is integrating dentists and medical doctors
see
that the mouth and the body are one and the same, and what's happening in the mouth can profoundly impact the health of the body and vice versa, and we are understanding how we have to have an integrated approach. And in fact, actually, they're teaching dentists to be like primary care providers, to see the mouth and what's going on in the mouth, and taking a whole health history is mm-hmm. an important key to protecting
right.
the health of the person.
Correct.
And that's exactly what you're saying, in that the overgrowth of bacteria and bleeding gums, periodontal disease, root canals are all compromising our overall health and well-being. It's not just isolated in the mouth.
Correct. You're absolutely right. So,
most
oncologists and doctors don't even talk about the mouth, right?
Right. No.
So
exactly. So, what are your thoughts about diet? You know, there are people who are recommending just juicing, and then people are saying no protein, no meat during cancer. Before, I mean, what are your thoughts on that based on your research and investigations?
Well, I think the biggest thing is you must eliminate all sugar whatsoever mm-hmm. from your diet, and you must eliminate the carbohydrates. So, because we know that cancer is fed by sugar. So you got to eliminate the sugar, which the obvious sugars are cookies, candies, pies, and cakes, and candy bars, things like that, and donuts, all those kinds of things that everybody knows. And then the non-obvious are the bread, rice, pasta, and potatoes. And so, and crackers and popcorn and all that kind of stuff. So patients need to, they need to change that. Now, in our practice, we kind of customize the patient's diet based upon the cancer. So, for example, if a patient's diabetic and cancer cells, we know, eat sugar for their food, so we maybe will lean towards a ketogenic diet. So patients who have brain cancer or pancreatic cancer, they all will get a ketogenic diet, which is basically no carbohydrate really intake at all. So you're basically eating protein and good fats. Now, with breast cancer and prostate cancer, I put them more on a vegetarian diet, and so no vegetables, but no, still no sugar. They can have fats. I don't care about fats. Fats are good for your cell membrane, mm-hmm. as long as they're healthy fats, like coconut oil and avocados and grapeseed oil and olive oil and those kinds of, you know, healthy oils, not the fake fats or anything like that. So, and then sometimes I think even getting as sophisticated as doing a metabolic piping diet. And so that really gets very customized. But I think some patients, we're so unique. We're all so special. And that I always say my philosophy is every individual is an original. And so that so I think you really have to look at the patient, look at all their blood work, have them fill out questionnaires of like how they like to eat, what they like to eat, how do they feel, all those kind of things. Eliminate food allergies because food allergy compromises the immune system. So, but if a person just embarking out on their own is you get rid of sugar and carbohydrates.
So that's a really good rule of thumb, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just take the sugar out. Do you ever recommend patients getting a glucometer and checking their after-meal glucose levels
right.
to see how they're managing?
Yeah, we call it food triggers. Yeah, so I actually do that. If I can't get someone's sugar down, then I will tell them, buy a glucometer, and after the food they eat, then you'll check their blood sugar, and then they'll know those sugars will increase their increase their sugar, and they have to avoid those. Like one of my patients was eating quinoa, and so which is a really wonderful food, but that raised your sugar.
For that person.
So that's what you have to do is you've got to do. I have like a food trigger sheet, and it shows what things raise people's blood sugar.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I love that little simple test because people can see for themselves how they're managing their blood sugar levels. And if it's spiking, that's feeding those cancer cells. You know, I heard a statistic that said cancer cells have 10 to 16 times more insulin receptors on them healthy cells. So,
right.
Boy, you wanna feed a cancer cell, give it lots of sugar. Keeps it going.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, gosh, this has been such a fascinating conversation. You've given us so much information, Dr. Keneally. I just love our time together. What is the best website for people to go to learn more about you and your center, the Center for New Medicine? What would you
recommend? Well, they could just go to drkeneally.com, and that brings you to everything that I do and that I'm involved in.
Okay.
It's Connealy. Uh-huh.
Right.
DrKeneally.com. And that, you know, because I write a little weekly newsletter. It's actually more than weekly. We have lots of things on our Center for New Medicine website. And we have lots of things on Cancer Center for Hope. So we have lots of great, latest, greatest information out there.
And that is wonderful because I just encourage everyone to go there, keep learning, get educated. It's a world of hope. We have so many options to keep us healthy, to support our ability to heal, rejuvenate, regenerate from anything. And I really appreciate your openness, your willingness to embrace in a positive, skeptical manner, but that openness to embrace new possibilities and all facets of the whole person. So thank you for the wonderful work you are doing and leading the way, Dr. Keneally. And it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, it's my privilege, and I appreciate what you do, because without you, we wouldn't be getting all this vital information out, Cheryl.
We're all doing our part as best we
yes.
can. Okay.
Wonderful.
Well, thank you. Thank you again, and wishing you all the best. And I'm wishing all of my listeners all of the best as well. Remember that this is about learning new things, but also putting it into action. Take a little
That's
baby
right.
step. Take one little change at a time. So until next week, remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.